This is the State of Things from the Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. And we're here on the set of The Aliens. Let me describe it. The setting, a lot behind a coffee shop. The characters, two slackers sitting around writing, philosophizing, and talking about Charles Bukowski. And in walks an awkward 17-year-old outcast. The slackers see a kindred spirit and take him under their wings. And that is the setup for Paper Lantern Theater Company's production of The Aliens, running at Upstage Cabaret at Triad Stage now through Sunday. With us is Jonathan Brady, the director, Sterling Hurst, and Owen Hickel Edwards are two of the actors. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
So, Jonathan, tell us a little bit more about this play.
Actually, I would like to start with the whole process of finding the play. With Paper Lantern Theater Company, we read a lot of plays and in search of a new season. And when we came across this one, it haunted me. Like, I put it down, and normally you just walk away from a play and you move on to the next one. This one just stuck with me. I couldn't shake it from my mind. And I actually was slated to direct the other play in our season. But because this one just stuck with me so, I decided that I had to direct it. But you aptly described the play. It's, to me, the essence of the play, it's about the redemptive power of friendship and of art and music. And I think that it is really relatable to all audiences. You know, even though it's these two 30-year-old characters who are slackers that hang up behind a coffee house, I think that we can all really relate to the 17-year-old because we've all been that awkward student in school. No matter what social caste you were in high school, it is an awkward time to grow up. And you really relate to him the most, I believe.
And these relationships are important. So when you think of slackers, you think of a kind of dissolute sense, even a sense of yourself. You're kind of vapid and amorphous. The idea that you would find yourself in anybody is sort of the first catch in this play.
Absolutely. Right? It's... Like I said, it's just haunting. And the other thing that really caught me about the play and the reason that I wanted to direct it is there was this quote from the playwright herself that kind of spoke to me, and I'd like to read that to you, and this might help put perspective on the play. The way human beings speak is so heartbreaking to me. We never sound the way we want to sound. We're always stopping ourselves mid-sentence because we're terrified of saying the wrong thing, and speaking is a kind of misery. And I guess I comfort myself by finding the rhythms in accidental poetry in everyone's inadequate attempts to articulate their thoughts. We're all sort of quietly suffering as we go about our days, trying and failing to communicate to other people what we want and what we believe. Now, if that doesn't sum it up, I don't know what is. I mean, I feel that way right now. I mean, you're asking me these questions. Am I saying the right thing? Am I doing the story justice? Am I doing your audience justice? So...
Well, you know, and there's that quote about speech being like banging on a drum trying to get a bear to dance when indeed we want to impress the stars with our ideas. And I think it's much the same thought. And but it's rooted, the title anyway, comes from that poem by Bukowski, right?
Yes. Actually, Sterling will read the poem for you. But I mean, obviously Bukowski, I don't know if you know Charles Bukowski, he spoke for the underbelly of society, the disenfranchised, the outsider, and she took the title from this poem. So, Sterling?
The Aliens by Charles Bukowski. You may not believe it, but there are people who go through life with very little friction or distress. They dress well, eat well, sleep well. They are contented with their family life. They have moments of grief, but all in all, they are undisturbed and often feel very good. And when they die, it is an easy death, usually in their sleep. You may not believe it, but such people do exist. But I am not one of them. Oh, no, I am not one of them. I'm not even near to being one of them. But they are there, and I am here.
The Aliens, a poem by Charles Bukowski, read here by Sterling Hurst, one of the actors in The Aliens, the play, now on stage at the Upstage Cabaret in Greensboro. What's the connection between Bukowski? You said he's a beat writer. That whole generation of writers, at least famous for bringing to our attention what's going on in the street and allowing that into literature in a way that it hadn't been part of literature before.
Yes. Bukowski didn't actually consider himself one of the Beats. He actually hated the Beats. He thought he was even better, you know, like he was lower than they were. If that's even possible.
I'll give you a junkie.
Yeah, right? And the funny thing, doing the research about the play, I actually learned quite a bit about Bukowski that I did not know. And he actually was a really hard worker. Like, people have glommed onto him as this underbelly, hard-drinking, give-it-to-the-man kind of person. And in actuality, he was a postman for years and wrote constantly. And this is the day before you could email things out. He used to type them up and poems, tons of them, and put them in envelopes and send them out to every publisher possible. And he did this for years upon years. So it's kind of funny that people have now put him as his patron saint of down with the man, when actually he was a hard-working person and worked fiercely to get to where he was. Now, don't get me wrong, he was a very hard drinker and was misogynistic and wasn't a very nice person at all. But it's kind of funny that, like, within the play, these characters kind of feel an attachment and an affinity to him, where these guys do nothing, where actually he did quite a bit. So,
well, can we see a scene and hear a scene from the play now, and maybe you can set it up for us?
Sure. So this is the beginning of Act Two, the very top of Act Two. Evan, the 17-year-old boy who works at the coffee shop, has just returned from being a counselor in training for 1 week at music camp, and he's just thrilled to come back and regale his stories of camp to his newfound friends behind the coffee shop.
Hey.
Hey. Welcome back from band camp.
Thanks. Yeah.
Did you have a good time?
Yeah, actually. I mean, it was pretty cool. I don't know. It was cool. The kids were cute and whatever, and I like, yeah. The other CITs were cool. I met a girl, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. It was just for like a week. But she was pretty cool. Nicole.
Nicole.
Yeah. She's like a violist. And like, I don't know. She lives in Boston. So if I wanted to visit her, I had to drive like 3 hours. So I don't know. It was pretty cool, though. I mean, it's kind of humiliating that it's taken me this long, but it's kind of humiliating.
No, that's beautiful, man. So did you get in her pants? Oh, sorry. Is that inappropriate?
No. I mean, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Great.
17 is kind of pathetic, though, right? I mean, that it's happening for the first time, like, now.
There are no rules, man.
Yeah. I mean, when was your first, whatever, kiss or...
Let's see. My first kiss, I was, like, 14? It was with this, like, 16-year-old chick at an Allman Brothers show, and I was totally tweaked out just to, like, kiss her. But then she tried to fool around with me in a porta potty, and I, like, didn't respond. I was totally humiliated.
Oh, man.
Then I dated this, like, younger girl when I was in high school. She was a freshman, and I was a senior, and I think I kind of messed with her head. We fooled around, and, like, now looking back, I'm not sure that she was, like, totally ready, you know? Then I cheated on her with this girl at a chess championship, then made the mistake of, like, coming back home and, like, telling her or whatever to, like, get it off my chest, and, like, right after I told her, she, like, crumpled into this little, like, heap on the ground, and she, like, cried and cried, but she stayed with me. And then I broke up with her anyway right before I went off to UVM. So, yeah.
Wow.
Bleak, man. It was bleak.
Owen Hickel, Edward Sterling Hurst, a scene from The Aliens, now on stage at the Upstage Cabaret in downtown Greensboro, Triad Stage, where we are right now. The play runs through Sunday. It's a brilliant performance, and I know that silence plays an important part of this, and you had to, in a couple of ways, modify the script because it's a little raunchier in the actual version.
So we That's an understatement.
We got the radio play. But also silence, those gaps. Talk a little bit about it, because it's brilliant to be able to bring across something that is inherently boring and then make it theatrical. We were laughing, weren't we? We were responding in a theatrical way. So first, talk about the use of silence in this play, and then I'm going to ask you technical questions about how you make it work.
Sure. When you first read the play, she actually puts right at the top of the script, she says in bold print, a third to half this play should be in silence. And so as a director, you're like, ooh, well, wow, how am I going to keep the audience invigorated and in the story? And actually, it's quite easy. Once you actually get into rehearsal, it's these two guys who have been hanging behind a coffee shop for 7 years together, there's going to be silence. I don't know if many of the married people out there listening, you know there's quite a bit of silence sometimes when you've been married for several years in your kitchen table. So you just have to imagine that this is your kitchen table. This is their kitchen table, and there's going to be silence. Sometimes you just don't say things. And especially with men, you know, I listened to this very interesting radio interview, actually, with Bradley Cooper, and he was talking about how he's friends with Robert De Niro, and they hang out together, which is, you know, to be a fly on the wall for that one. But they sit there, and Bradley Cooper says they just won't talk sometimes. They will just sit there in each other's presence and not say a word. And the interviewer was like, well, isn't that uncomfortable? He's like, no, you just kind of fall into a rhythm. You're comfortable with yourself. He's comfortable with himself. You're thinking about what you're going to say next. So that is kind of the mindset that I used going into this process with the actors. I mean, the silences within the work aren't there to be this, you know, kind of, I'm being avant-garde and I'm not saying anything. You know, it's not like that at all. The silences are there for a reason. There are actual things going on underneath. So, and the audience has been responding to it so well. So
I'm going to ask you about that. Maybe I'll put the question to the actors because, yeah, my kitchen table after 30-some years of marriage has those silences, and it's a blessed place. You all don't want to be there for that. It turns out that's not a lot of fun to watch, even though it's great fun and yeah, kind of mystical to be engaged in. So now my problem is not the engagement of two actors who are self-possessed and comfortable with silence. How do I keep that audience engaged? So let me ask you, and I'll start with you, Sterling, how you play this and cope with the menace of the stage, right? Silence.
Well, a lot of the time when there's a silence, there's something going on with the character. So, you know, perhaps, you know, my scene partner, Josh or Owen, had said something to me, you know, as that character. And, you know, that elicits a response from me that takes a while, you know, for me to process, you know, whether it be because I have shroom-laced tea or because there's something that I want to say to them that's really hard to say. And in real time, in real life, it is hard to say certain things. And so you kind of have to work yourself up into saying them, you know, like, you know, when's the last time you told someone that you love them, you know, and you know, you take that for granted. You say, well, we know we love each other. We're not going to say it. We don't have to say it all the time. But, you know, maybe you haven't said it in 7 years.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Owen? Same process? How does it work for you?
Yes. I actually have a quote. It's better to be thought a fool and remain silent than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Well, let me write that down. I could use that.
I actually found that the audience responds more when you're not speaking, at least for my character. I know that there are so many things happening, as Sterling has said, when there's unspoken tension or desire that is going unfulfilled. I think that full space or full silences, it's not just pauses. They're not, like JB said, they're not just there to be avant-garde. They're full of life and meaning, and I know that there's a lot of things that are going on between us that I think people connect to more because it's a visceral connection. It's an empathetic connection. It's a cathartic connection. I also know that this play, as from the quote from Annie Baker, deals a lot with self-censorship. And I know, especially with my character, a lot of the pauses are figuring out what to say. We live in a world that's very dangerous to have opinions. We live in a world where instantly, if you voice an opinion online, on Facebook, in public, you can be instantly berated by thousands of people, not just your friends, thousands upon thousands of people who will criticize your ideas, who will belittle your ideas. And it's dangerous to live in a world, and this play takes place in 2009, not too long ago, to live in a world where if you voice an opinion, you risk everything. And it didn't used to be that way.
So, Jonathan, then the challenge is to, and for the actors, to embody all of that stuff that's going on internally. I, as the audience, have to watch that happening, and there has to be something physical going on with the actors, right? And also, you have the challenge of keeping this thing rhythmic. Is there an internal rhythm that you're conscious of and have to convey?
Unequivocally, and that's the great thing about Annie Baker, is she has a fine-tuned ear for how people actually speak in everyday life. And there is a natural rhythm in there, and that's why the silences totally work. I guarantee you, if you come see the play, you're not going to think, oh, my God, why are these silences here? Why are they not speaking? Why is this happening? It's not like I'm going to beat a dead horse. It's, you know, it's not avant-garde. It's not there to be, you know, catchy or new. It's there because those silences are actually there between these characters. And there are themes and issues that I can't relate to because I don't want to give away the plot, but that actually, you know, that are deep and that, you know, that you would take a second to think before you speak. I mean, we all don't have sitcom writers, you know, in our brains, or Oscar Wilde sitting back there telling us what to say and throwing out bon mots all the time. I mean, it's just not happening. But the great thing about her is she knows that. She knows how these characters speak, and she gives them a natural rhythm. So it just naturally works.
And that takes us back to Bukowski in a way. It's not enough to simply understand the underbelly and the underclass. To be able to convey that in a way that's in the common, in a way that's uncommonly interesting, becomes the artist's challenge. She is a writer, apparently, has done it. And you don't have to convince us because you just did that with the scene. We get that, you know, that it certainly works. Tell us about the theater company. You're a theater company?
Yes, we are. But this is our fifth season. It's Paper Lantern Theater Company. It was started by five women in Winston-Salem, and I came along after their first show. I actually went to see their first show, and then I was recruited for their second show, and I've been a member ever since. It is, you know, we're about collaboration and risk and creation is our, you know, part of our mission statement. And this play is, you know, it is kind of risky. You know, it isn't, you know, like I said, it isn't like Oscar Wilde. But the theater company, we've grown exponentially every year. You know, we started off with a zero budget and, you know, come on, let's put on a show, Mickey Rooney style, you know, and we hammered the set and we did it all together. And now in our fifth season, you know, we are just thrilled to be back here at the Upstage Cabaret with Triad Stage. I mean, this is a phenomenal space to put on work. And just as you were talking earlier about, you know, the people that you work with really kind of make everything happen. And working with Paper Lantern Theater Company and working with Triad Stage, we couldn't find a better partnership and better people to be a part of and to really support us and give us everything that we need. It's very hard to be a theater company nowadays. The audiences are dwindling, and so we need you all to come to the theater. And thankfully, we keep on growing. So thank you for your support and
thank you for being here. Thanks so much. Jonathan Brady, director of Paper Lantern Theater Company's production, The Aliens. It's right here at the Upstage Cabaret through Sunday. Sterling Hurst and Owen Hickel Edwards, two of the stars of that play. For tickets, go to The Aliens for The Aliens, go to triadstage.org. Right now, we're going to hear some more music from Laura Lynn Dossett, and then we'll hear that now. And again, after the break, she's with Scott Mannering, and we will be back after this.
It's all too clear in light of day that you don't hear a word I say. The glaring truth, the staring sun, no need for proof when day is done. I hide in the dark and I make believe I give my blind heart what it wants to see. 'Cause darling, last night I had a dream that you loved me. I know the night he is a lover, stealing kisses while I sleep. I know the night he is a leaver, he'll make a promise he can't keep. I know the night he is a liar, telling stories that just can't be. 'Cause darling, last night I had a dream that you loved me.
Going.